Hey there, Knicks fans. How you doing? It's your boy, Jonathan Macri, with you for another episode of the Knicks Film School Podcast. I'm excited to be coming at you about, what is it? 25 minutes after the Knicks have just put a spanking with a nice big paddle on the Boston Celtics in the Boston Garden. And joining me, because we are recording this on a Sunday, who else? It's always appropriate when this person joins me, but he's a ginger. He is pale skinned. I mean, he would fit right in Boston, and I do believe he has some experience in the Boston area where you must have just fit it like a hand in a glove. Jeremy Cohen, hello, sir. How are you?
I'm good. That was quite the introduction, John.
I think it just comes to me.
Of course. No, hey, I get it. Of all people, I understand. Yeah, I went to school in the Boston area. The one thing is I'm not Irish at all. So, and I stayed clear of South Boston for the most part.
Okay.
But yeah, no, it always feels good. I lived with guys who obviously were from the Boston area because I went to school there, and it's always a great feeling to beat the Celtics. I went once to a Knicks game. I think Cole Aldrich absolutely destroyed Boston's front court. That was really fun to see. Other than that, though, I mean, it's when you're watching, it can be depressing. Today, not the case. This was a thumping that will be remembered for, because the last time the Knicks won by 30 or more against the Celtics in the Garden, I think the vast majority of people listening to this probably were not alive, it's fair to say.
I saw tweets like alerts popping up on my phone that said it was the biggest win in Boston since when was it?
I think it was 1970 something.
Okay, there you go.
Wasn't it? Or did they say 37 years ago?
I'll take a look now, but yes. Okay. So it's a long time.
If it's 37 years ago, obviously there are more people listening who are alive then, but if it was even longer than that, then
so,
naturally.
So basically the year I was born roughly. That sounds about right.
Yeah.
So a little bit of a table of contents for today. We're going to talk about the game. We're going to talk about kind of state of affairs for the Knicks. And then we are going to talk about the Harden trade. I know I did a quick Harden trade thought thing on the YouTube channel, but I think both Jeremy and I feel that it is interesting from a Knicks point of view for a couple of reasons. So we are going to get into that. But first things first. Boy, I feel like a coach. I'm about to say, can't ever react to what is it? Don't react to be too high after a win and too low after a loss. And I feel like as a fan, we have to abide by the same thing. But at the same time, it's hard. Let me tell you why it's hard for me not to have as Jeremy takes a swig of his beer, not to have a significant reaction to them beating the Celtics by 30 today. The Knicks were coming off 5 losses in a row, obviously. They are a young team. They're a team with a new coach. They're a team. They're an organization that has questionable a foundation as any in the league, just because of the amount of losing they have done for as long as they have done it. And I was starting to get worried, and I've said this as much on the last couple post games, that guys would start to question the methods and like the work that they were putting in with Tibbs and all of that stuff. And then they come out here and yes, the Celtics missed a lot of threes, and maybe we'll talk about that. I don't really know what there is to say, but I thought the defense was sounder than it has been all year. I thought they were crisp. I thought they were clean. The fact that it was a 1 o'clock start and the Knicks came out with a sense of poise and purpose. And then Tibbs, sure enough, said after the game that he keeps telling the guys, you're practicing great. Keep at it. If you continue this level of preparation, the results will come. And they are clearly still buying into that. And for as much as we'll maybe get into other things and roster moves and starting lineup decisions and all that stuff, me personally as a fan, that's the thing that I still hold highest in terms of what I'm looking at. How are they taking to this coaching staff, this regime? And that's why I feel really, really good coming off of this win today.
Yeah, really well said. And it seemed like the Celtics missed a ton of threes. I was really hoping that they would actually set the record for the lowest three-point percentage in a game and then eclipse the Knicks, because then we wouldn't have to, you know, worry about the Knicks having done it. That was not to be, of course, but
from earlier this season. Yes.
Right. But yeah, but a ton of the threes that they took and subsequently missed were above the break threes. I think there was one moment where I want to say it was Bullock who was on defense, where Tice was above the break and Smart was in the corner, and he was the only one guarding both. And he kind of, he tried to figure out which direction to go to, and he hedged for Smart for a second, but then went back to Tice. But then went back to Smart because he realized, well, Tice taking that shot is a higher chance of him missing it than Smart from the corner. And he was right. It was the gamble that paid off. It's, you know, this isn't so much praising Bullock as it is like, there's clearly a mindset going on here where there's a system in place schematically. They know what they need to do in terms of pushing up where the 3-point attempts are. And there's just a nice moment to see. But you know, you see these young guys that are playing so well, and yeah, I mean, everyone has up and down games, right? Like, yeah, sure, today was maybe not the game that Kevin Knox was going to have compared to the other ones. But I got to say, when he hit his lone shot, that corner three, yep, I said money before the ball even left his hands. And he hit it.
Because they feel like they're all going to go in now.
Exactly. He is
just crazy to say about, I know, Kevin Knox.
I know. It's fantastic. But it's the sort of thing where I guess it almost felt like the biggest issues I had to do with minutes, where it was like, okay, Mitchell Robinson's pretty banged up. The Knicks are winning by like 26 in the fourth. You don't need to bring him in. There's a game tomorrow, unless you're planning on sitting him tomorrow. But even still, if you're not, or even if you are, why are you bringing him back in? A few minutes later, he was brought out. Things like that, where, you know, there's a lot that we have to nitpick. And I don't know. It seems to me in general that we as a fan base, and I'm certainly part of this too, from time to time, but I'd say that what I've seen, because John, I know that you're not on Twitter as much because you have a family and mouths to feed, and I have my own mouth to feed, and that's about it.
It's an important mouth.
It is, absolutely.
Food is food. You want good food. You want tasty. All the things.
Of course, edible food is even better.
It's best.
Yeah, but so you know, this idea where I've just kind of been sitting and watching and observing, and it just, you know, it just feels like every single time something happens, there always has to be a negative attached to it. Like, let me put it this way. I am very vocal about the fact that I don't want Elfrid Payton starting anymore. I think a lot of us are. A lot of us would love to see Emmanuel quickly start.
Yeah.
But let's also go back to the draft, when a lot of the talking points were, I can't believe the Knicks traded the 32nd pick, or how could the Knicks not have taken a PG, or why are they doing this in terms of Elfrid Payton? And you know, we've talked about this. I don't necessarily have to rehash that part, but the idea of, well, we've gone from, I can't believe the Knicks didn't take a point guard, to, hey, the player that the Knicks drafted late in the first round should be starting. And that says something about us. Or the fact, yeah, that a lot of us said Kevin Knox should not be a basketball player. That's on me. I said that. John, we've both said that from time to time based on the last 2 years, and he's showing, hey, he's a rotational player. The fact that Mitchell Robinson now is among the league leaders in blocks and steals combined, where before, you know, he was struggling, and now, yes, it's like, we want him to take a three, but what do you know, like, there's clearly promise here. Or Obi Toppin, where he had a great game today, especially considering how he's still coming back. He had 12 points in 12 minutes. He looked bouncy. He's going to make rookie mistakes. And then there was one where he was driving baseline, and a couple other times he looked a little too close to small things as well, but he's not going to be perfect. But then, you know, you see, well, what about Devin Vassell or Tyrese Haliburton? And it's like, again, we've played what, 14 games, right?
And Obi Toppin has played,
he's played like four or five. If you count like 59 seconds of one of those games,
if you don't count the 57 second appearance, this was Obi Toppin's, third game,
right?
And he went out and had 12 points in 12 minutes.
Yeah. And so it's just this constant narrative. And of course, how could I forget about RJ Barrett, where it's the idea of, obviously we all want to see him shoot threes. It's really hard to see him missing them, but it's the sort of thing where again, he's a young player who's able to follow up bad games with good games and vice versa. We don't have to all say like, all be out. We're so reflexive to these games when we really need to view them from a step back, where if you're looking at the record, which is a fine record considering the state of the team as is and the quality that's on the roster.
Oh,
even still, it's the proof is in the pudding, not by the results. You can look at the results. That's fine. But look at the players themselves and how they have improved, and how I really can't say that there's any player who has regressed compared to last year, at least who feels like a mainstay moving forward.
I was about to say, other than Peyton,
right?
But
I don't view him as someone who's stay here long, like, or even Randall. And that's another thing: the idea of forcing Randall out. Look, guys, we know why Obi Toppin was drafted. We know that he could easily be a Randall successor. But unless Toppin is ready to take over for Randall, there's no reason to push Randall out the door. There just isn't. So I get caught up in these things too, but I've been really trying to be patient because of this being, as we've said, year one of the Rose administration. Just view things not so much from a game by game basis, but just overall, try to look at bigger picture things, because it will drive you fucking nuts to keep doing this to yourselves. And like today was fun, right? Today was a great game, but then
it was wonderful.
But what was the narrative before today's game? The Knicks have lost 5 straight. We start questioning Tom Thibodeau. We start wondering about the players. It's this anxious need to feel pity and to find the negatives when I'm not saying ignore them. It's just be level-headed about them.
So here's what I'm going to say. I'm going to actually, as someone who got myself in some hot water, as Jeremy takes another swig after that, it was a glorious rant.
Thank you. And I feel like I did it last week, but again, it's just like this team went 5-3. Yes. But what did you expect if they went worse? Like, we know this is not a good team. So if they went better, which they did, they went 5-3. It's not so much a drop off. It's just regressing to the mean, which I know may sound the same thing, but it really isn't. It's really different. And if they were just shit the whole time, then they'd be shit the whole time. And we'd be yelling and screaming when, again, this is the team that we expected to be bad in the first place. So
there's always going to be yelling and screaming because we're New Yorkers, and it is ingrained in the fabric of our being that just being worse is not acceptable, that there has to be some way, there has to be something else you can do, there has to be more effort that you could put in, and some change that you could make or whatever. And I know that sounds crazy to say about a franchise that has given us what the Knicks have given us over the last 20 years, but I really do believe that, which is why when people say the Knicks have the best fan base in sports, or at the very least in the NBA, and despite what I've said at times, I do believe that, because like, there is no throwing in the towel. There is always, like, what you're saying is complaining, right? Which is, by the way, I said the very same thing, what I was about to refer to before, getting myself in hot water over the summer when I defended the Elfrid Payton signing, and people were going crazy about it. And I was like, look, you just signed a guy who, if you look at the numbers, last year was not his fault, and he signed him for 1 year and $5 million. It is what it is. We're going to talk about Payton in a second, but like, I think it is, again, it is that New Yorker in all of us that just refuses to accept bad and is not going to say, all right, this is what it is. Like, we're constantly going to look for things to tinker and things to change. And that's okay. That's fine. But at some point, to your rant, there needs to be, I just think it's a lot easier if you take a step back from the ledge, because if you're going to be a fan of a team, you know, as you said, I've been off social media a little bit because I don't have time to fit it into my schedule anymore. And it's like, it's easier this way to not have to see all the everything, all of the a torch being lit every time. Like you said, Mitchell Robinson plays 5 minutes more today than he should. I'm sure there were people like that are raising a stink about this on Twitter. I think if you're a Knicks fan and you're trying to be reasonable, I think there's a couple things that you need to accept. One, Vegas is not stupid. If anything, they will set a higher number for the Knicks before the season because they know New Yorkers tend to put money on their team, or New York teams garner more bets, right? They had the Knicks as the lowest over-under in the league. And as we sit here right now, 14 games in, which is almost a fifth of the way through. It is more than a fifth of the way through the season, right? Because 14. Yeah. I think it's a fifth of the way through the season. They are 6-8. They have the 21st ranked net rating in the league, which is astounding. In terms of defensive rating, the Knicks are back to being a top 10 defense. And if you want to say, well, of course they're back to being a top 10 defense. They just held the Celtics to whatever the hell points they held them to, 75 points. Well, yeah, that's one of 14 games that they played.
I think they were 13th going into the game.
Yeah.
Which goes to show. This so helps, it's, but
it, yeah, and like, record. And you want to point to after two games, after three games, after four games, after five games, the Knicks are getting lucky with teams hitting a lot of threes against them, some of which are wide open. That argument gets a lot more tenuous after 14 games. It's still an argument. It's still valid. And the Celtics, they had some open threes today, but they were not. Like, very rarely was it like guys had all the time in the world to load up. There was someone flying at them because that is what a Thibodeau defense is supposed to do. It's supposed to make guys think twice. All right. So I think if you're a Knicks fan and you look at that big picture and you want to be fair to the team moving forward, I think if the one thing I will say, and again, this is coming from the guy who defended the Elfrid Payton signing. If there's one thing you want to jump up and down about and be like, listen, it's fucking time. It's quickly still coming off the bench and Elfrid starting because they got Mike Breen saying it on the broadcast.
Yep.
It's not, Breen literally said today, he's like, it's not that Payton's a bad player, but if you can't hit a jump shot in this starting lineup, that really hurts him. So if that's the thing, if that's the hill you want to die on, I'm not going to tell you you're wrong, but in terms of the other stuff, like, what did you want? You know, like if the biggest issue that you have is that Mitchell Robinson played too many minutes in a game where he looked like he was maybe hobbling. Well, okay. So then what you're saying is you don't trust the training staff, right? But he's also a guy who for 2 years now, we've kind of questioned his, like, how much does he mentally stay in the game? How much is he focused, right? Like, there's a reason why he fell to the 36th pick in the draft. And this is a guy who thought highly enough of what was going on out there today to want to gut it out, whereas he did not need to. I personally look at that as a positive. You want to look at it as a negative? I mean, that's your right to do so. But I just, there's just so many more positives, even after the 5-game losing streak. Because again, the last thing I'll say on this, even with the 5-game losing streak, it wasn't like they were going out there and not giving a damn. They were losing because they have less shot creators than anyone in basketball. The couple of guys that are healthy that were out there weren't hitting threes. And by the way, since Reggie Bullock has come back, their offense has looked a lot better. Cause he, even if he's not hitting shots, he gives a little bit more spacing. And Burks is still out and Frank is still out and Toppin was out for the whole time. And like all of this stuff matters. So, you know, it's like, again, what did you expect? Coming out of this game, and if there's anything else you want to say in general, say it. But I think we should probably talk about Emmanuel quickly, right?
Yeah, 100%. Just from a macro point of view, again, because we're on the same page. We want him to start over Elfrid Payton. I don't think that there's any convincing argument, especially because if your idea is increasing Elfrid Payton's trade value, number one, what really is that? Now, number two, he has a no protection clause. And number three, unlike the other Knicks who were signed, because he was re-signed with because he was signed by the Knicks again, he isn't eligible to be traded until like March or so. I think the beginning of March, as opposed to the other Knicks who are available in February. But even
he's
so,
he's a waiver candidate. He's not a trade candidate.
Right, exactly. He's a salary filler guy. And if he's really interested in not being traded, then it's like, okay, well, we'll just waive you and then no one will pick you up. Exactly. But again, like the thing with Emmanuel quickly here is look at the last four games, 29 minutes per game, or 29 minutes, 22 minutes, 28 minutes, 21 minutes. I mean, yes, of course we want him to start because we want that spacing to be helped by, you know, tremendously in the backcourt of the starting lineup, but it's not like he's not playing.
Can we just say the last three games, average minutes?
Oh, sure.
It's last three games, Elfrid Payton, 25 minutes a game. Emmanuel Quickly, 24 minutes a game.
Right.
So it's, again,
You want less Payton, of course. You want more Quickly. 100%. You do. But it's not like it's this outrageous disparity between the two. And it even registers for Quickly. I mean, he's got 19 points, 23 points, 17 points. He had 8 assists today. His floater game was impeccable. I mean, it's just, he's showing growth. And that is so incredible to see, especially for a guy who the Knicks actually, after trading up for, traded back for. They traded back for Emmanuel quickly and still managed to get a good player. So that's just exciting to see. And, you know, and the connection between him and Obi Toppin was really fun. That's another thing. If you want to weigh what is more important, having Emmanuel quickly next to Obi Toppin and Kevin Knox, or next to RJ Barrett and Julius Randle. And I'm inclined to think it's with RJ, I'd like to see that. But again, if he's helping players around him that are able to prosper a little bit more, because if Elfrid Payton's not looking their way necessarily, then that's going to be a problem for them and for the backcourt as a whole. There's got to be something to be improved upon here. So
Tibbs even said after the game, he mentioned that duo of Quickly and Toppin. So I think it would be naive for us to not think that there is some organizational thinking to, like, hey, we just drafted these kids, let's make it a point to see if we get them 5-10 minutes on the floor together moving forward.
Yeah, just stagger accordingly. That's what I agree with.
Yeah. But he's Quickly's phenomenal. I don't know how else to say it. I think Obi probably calmed some fears of the Halliburton heads out there. You know, and look, Halliburton's had a very nice season. He's hitting above 50% from three. But if you're just looking at the numbers and you're not watching Halliburton play, I'm not saying he's not a really good player. That dude is, for all we know, could wind up being like having an RJ Barrett type impact on a team for a very long time, being the third or fourth best player on a good team. And he's playing off of other guys. But anyone who thinks like Halliburton was going to come in here and be the answer to the team's point guard problems, their issues on offense are because they don't have anybody else or anybody who can create. The closest they have is Julius Randle, and God knows that dude can't do any possibly more heavy lifting than he's doing right now. I think Obi was nice today. Knox, I do also just want to say very, very quickly, no pun intended. Knox is now on the season. You want to guess what his 3-point percentage is?
I don't know, is it like 40.8 or something?
It is 44.2% from downtown on nearly 4 attempts per game, but in only 21 minutes per game. So per 36, you're looking at for Kevin Knox, just over 6 attempts per 36 minutes, again, on a 44% conversion rate. Obi Toppin, also small sample size, he's at 41% he's taken 8 3-point attempts for 36 minutes. I know that really doesn't mean anything because he hasn't really played any time, but again,
I'd like to see him use more as a role man, but you also need the offense around him to be effective. And as we had talked about before, it's still nice to see them trying to expand his game, like what Kentucky does for their players and trying to make their bigs more comfortable and having more all around games. I mean, not even just their bigs. I mean, look at Emmanuel Quickly himself. He wasn't playing as on ball and we thought he was going to be off ball. He is clearly demonstrating that he can be an asset on the ball. So again, it's all process.
And it goes back to what we were just saying about what is the point of this season? Yes, they're trying to win games, but if Obi Toppin establishes himself as a threat from three-point land, oh my God, is his career going to be a sight to behold if they then put him in situations where he can actually be the role man with space, like we saw in the second half a little bit today.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's going to be exciting. Anybody else from today's game? We should talk. I mean, Julius Randle, I personally have run out of things to say about Julius Randle.
You can only wax poetic so much before it's just the norm.
I mean, do you want to just read the numbers real quick? He is at 23 points a game, 22.9. He is all the way down to 6.5 assists. Julius, you're slacking, man.
Well, he had 4 today. So, I mean, come terrible. On, Julius.
Just awful. Still over 10 rebounds a game. The turnovers are down under 4 for the first time this year. So that's nice. That assist to turnover ratio all of a sudden, 6.5 to 3.9. It's getting a lot more acceptable. Hitting almost 80% of his free throws, and he's getting to the line 6 times a game. And then the thing that might come back down, I mean, yes, he's making a lot of long mid-rangers. The other thing that might come down to earth a little bit is the 3-point shot, 35.7% on 4 attempts per game. But I also feel like a healthy number of those are from the corners. And if you want to tell me that Julius Randle has become an efficient corner three-point shooter at this point in career, I may believe that.
Yeah.
Because guys could do that. Form is fine. And then last thing before maybe we talk about the trade, RJ Barrett, how are you feeling about RJ right now on the whole?
I feel like it's at equilibrium. You know, again, you had some really not good games, bad games beforehand, and then he seems to rebound. He's showing mid-range. He's showing his size, his strength. Yes, the wiggle, you'd like that to be a little better. You want him to be craftier, but you can see that he's still thinking. I mean, the fact that he's able to pick up 11 rebounds, it doesn't seem that astonishing to me because it seems that he's always collecting 7, 8, 9 rebounds. You know, he has a nose for the ball. He sees players constantly. I think there was it might've been the Cavs game where there was a play. He could have easily gone to the hoop and he just dished it perfectly to, I want to say it was Noel, but I can't remember exactly which big it was, but it was that sort of thinking where he's not going to plow right into a guy, sort of like what we saw from Randle last year, where he just wasn't going to be consistent. And then we saw it from, ironically enough, Elfrid Payton today, where there was like a 3-on-2 opportunity after the steal. And Payton just kind of took it to the hoop and made a terrible layup. RJ managed to get the rebound and was fouled and went to the line. You know, I mean, that's what you don't want to see. But the fact that, again, RJ is able to use his size and his strength to be bigger, you know, it seems to me that the conversation with RJ frequently is about his ceiling. But again, like, he's showing enough where he's like, I'm just looking at the floor right now and everything else is kind of gravy from there. And he's showing the makings of a very, very good player from the floor, at least. I mean, the shot looks more improved. I feel bad for Drew Hanlon, who just got a ton of shit from people because RJ's game was not doing well. You know, that sort of thing where I know that the numbers also may seem a little different because he did take 11 attempts. He had 19 points, which again is still great. But there's a point earlier where he was at least after the first half, where he was just firing on all cylinders and it looked beautiful to see. So again, like, you know, these are the types of games that feel encouraging. They kind of cover for the ones that feel less encouraging. And then the discouraging games get covered by these. So it's this endless back and forth that you kind of have to evaluate later. So as of right now, I see a player who, and I think that at least one of the two threes he hit was a wide open corner, which, I mean, like, again, if there's times where he's not hitting that shot,
but that's so fine.
Right. It's great. Like,
there's two evolution steps in the NBA. There's hit your open ones when you have time so that eventually people will guard you. And then once people start guarding you, that's it. You've beaten level one. Level two is off the dribble, fancy stuff. If we never get there with RJ, that's fine. He could still be the type of player that you just said, right?
Right. Yeah. And, you know, I mean, at the end of the Cavs game, it was disappointing because first of all, Drummond absolutely kicked that ball. It was disappointing. There were some mental mistakes that RJ made too, but it wasn't totally on him too. I mean, Tibbs even said to Mitch, foul Drummond, I believe, which was a mistake in my opinion, because it just seemed like you have enough time where you can force them to miss a shot and then it's a one possession game. But those are the types of games where you grow from them. You learn from the mistakes that you made. You're not going to go under your legs or dribbling under your legs to try to create some separation. You're going to maybe not be quite as crafty, and that's okay. Take these games and use them to learn, because if they're losses, then okay, it's the higher draft odds most likely. And if they're wins, then that feels good too.
I'm going to be the broken record again. It is. We ask the question, what is the point of this season? Yes, wins are very important. And would it have been nice to get that Cleveland win, right? Yes, it would have, because then now theoretically, maybe we'd be sitting at 7-7 and boy, would that feel good. But at the same time, you don't know whether RJ Barrett could have pulled out that game unless you give him the opportunity to try to pull out that game. And that is an investment, win or lose, you're willing to make. I want to say three really quick things about RJ, and then we'll talk about the trade. Actually, a quick word from we don't have a quick word from our sponsors today. I don't have an ad read today. How sad is that? So we're going to go right to the trade after I say my three things about RJ Barrett. First thing, would you like to guess how many players in the NBA this season are averaging 16 points, 7 rebounds, 3 assists over these numbers? At least 16 points, at least 7 rebounds, at least 3 assists, at least 3 free throws made, and under 2 turnovers made. How many total players?
Under 2 turnovers. Wow, that's definitely going to weed a lot of guys out.
Yep.
I'm going to say,
if I didn't give you the turnover part, it would have been about a dozen guys, all of which have all of which have made an all-star team, with the exception of one Julius Randle, who's probably going to make an all-star team this year. But we're doing it with the under two turnovers.
Okay, because I would have said eight if there had been the under two, but now I'm, if it was a dozen before that, I'm going to say it's four.
It is two. One of them is Mr. Barrett. The other one is Anthony Davis. So not terrible company there.
For Anthony Davis, of course.
What?
For Anthony Davis, of course.
The second thing I'm going to say about RJ Barrett, he is currently, as I sit here and record this, 229th among, how many players is this? 465 NBA players this season, in free throw percentage at 73.9. Do you want to take a guess at who is one spot above him in 228th place?
Oh, God. I mean,
it's not Anthony Davis.
Okay. Yeah. Is it another Nick?
No, it's a player of some renown.
At 73.9%?
RJ is at 73.9%. This player is at 74.4%.
All right. Sabonis.
No. A different light haired white guy. Luka Doncic. From Europe also. So you were close. And then the third thing I just want to
say, it's basically the same
thing. Same person, really. Yeah. The third thing I want to say is we saw RJ again today put a similar move like he tried to put on Drummond the other night on who was it? I forget actually who it was on, but it resulted in a turnover and a fast break. And I think the last, I'm not trying to tell RJ Barrett to like accept being like some kind of a lesser player, but I think the sooner, and I said sentiments of this ilk before, I think the sooner RJ Barrett maybe does a little bit better job of accepting his limitations in terms of like, look, you know, I might not be the headliner. I might just be the guy who's more like, that's why I always went all off season when I was thinking of comps for him of like what I'd be happy with, kept going back to Michael Finley, which is so weird because like Finley is a guy who not a Hall of Famer, but you know, made a couple all-star teams, was like an invaluable part to so many winning teams. And like occasionally that dude would actually go out and get his own bucket, but that was not his forte. And I just, if that's the type of career, I'm not saying exactly that type of player, but like that type of career that we got from RJ Barrett, I'd be thrilled. So yeah, no complaints. All right. James Harden. By the way, I saw a lot of people make a lot of, the fact that he was warming up for his first game as a Net and looked considerably thinner than his last game as a Rocket. And I want to tell people, like, you haven't seen those commercials for those like belly band, like those shirts that like hold in your fat.
Yeah.
Like clearly he just went out and got one of those or had, you know, Joe Tsai go and ship him one. I don't know what the order of operations was there, but
Black is slimming. That's the other thing.
Black is slimming. This is true. I always used to go in my Goomba days on Staten Island. Quick aside, I was always a black undershirt guy, not a white undershirt guy.
Right. You know, do you have the chain too?
Did I have the chain?
Yeah. Do you have a chain to go with the black undershirt?
Come on, man.
They would.
I wouldn't even be allowed to eat pasta if I didn't still wear this thing. This is. It's part of my, you know, it's part of my being. I talked about the trade before on the YouTube after it happened. So why don't you tee us off here on why you think this trade matters for our purposes as Knicks fans?
Yeah, sure. I mean, you know, obviously you have one of the best players in the NBA coming right into the Atlantic Division. That's not fun if you're the Knicks. I think it certainly impacts how you build later on because, I mean, let's face it, the Nets window is going to be what it was in terms of the talent because you had Kevin Durant for another few years, you had Kyrie Irving for another few years, and now you're going to have James Harden for around the same time. So it doesn't feel like that significant. But I think to me, I'm really curious how this works out for the Nets just based on how, to me, it feels like Harden and Kyrie have very overlapping skills and overlapping deficiencies. But when you have some great players, you're going to be able to make it work. Of course, the defense has to hold up. It's going to be really problematic, but this is not Nets film school. This is Knicks film school. In terms of how everything's being dealt with trade-wise, the one player I'm kind of keeping my eyes on has to be Victor Oladipo. And you actually wrote about him in one of your newsletters, and it's not often that we disagree on something. So it's fun when we do.
Let's have at it.
So I don't believe that Victor Oladipo can be had for a lot. I think you can get him pretty easily, and I don't think that the competition is that stiff. So the big thing
this isn't fun because I'm going to agree with you.
Well, it seemed like you weren't, because it seemed like they gave up a huge haul to get, like, the fact that they rather get Oladipo, they could re-sign him versus having LeVert.
So my initial instinct when the trade was announced was that the Rockets had to be feel good about re-signing Oladipo and we're going to value him, because I personally thought the LeVert contract was a good contract, and I thought LeVert was a good player. There's this kidney thing now, which I don't know, you know, they seem to think he's going to be fine, and we hope he is, obviously, especially after the injury he went through. But again, we don't need to talk about that right now. But the more I think Windhorse has talked about this a little bit, and maybe some other people, and I apologize if I'm missing anybody. This may have been more of a money thing for Mr. Fertitta, who may be the worst owner in the NBA.
Cheapest, I would have to. I mean, it's hard to say because he just spent a lot of money on the Rockets beforehand. But
and how did he like that? Not so much.
No, and he's definitely not like that. You now. There's even a commercial I've seen on TV, which has been Fertitta handing over a $1 million check, and it's just the funniest thing, because he says this is gonna hurt me giving it over, but here you go, and you can just tell the idea of him losing any money, especially because all of his money is tied up in entertainment and can't really do that right now.
That's the guy who docks a waitress 2% because she was too late bringing his Coke over to the table, and he owns restaurants, so I'm fully confident in saying that. So that's the one thing, and then the other thing that lends credence to that argument is the Raphael Stone earlier today had a press conference in which he was asked about Oladipo, and was basically like, if it works out, great. If it doesn't, like, he was asked about the trade first, and he didn't mention Oladipo's name. He just talked about the picks and the flexibility that it offers them. And then someone was like, so what do you think about Oladipo, the guy who like has made 2 All-Star teams that you got? And that's when he said the other part. So I can't disagree with you right here on this.
That's one. Okay. Well, so much for that, but that's fine since we're on the same page. I am interestingly enough writing about Victor Oladipo and the Knicks, because one thing that I think is really fascinating is that, again, like, I don't think it takes a lot to get Victor Oladipo, but I'm not sure what teams
out there want to talk about what's not a lot, or do you want to say?
Well, we can. I mean, to me, it's like, it's hard to gauge his exact value, because you could say, well, it was what? Like,
and we're talking right now.
Right now.
In trade. Okay.
Right. The idea of, I guess it was LeVert going to Indiana and instead of to Houston, and Victor Oladipo going instead. But the Rockets didn't even kick over. They didn't kick any assets over. I mean, they didn't necessarily have to, because they were also trading James Harden. But it's trying to gauge what Oladipo's worth is. And I've been trying to think of what teams even would be interested in him, because you have to imagine that unless there's a team out there that's like, I don't know, the Sixers, that feels like Oladipo helps put them over the edge and that trading for him makes sense, even if it's a Jimmy Butler type situation, then that's something worth exploring. But I don't know how many teams actually want to do that for Oladipo.
Well, Green is making...
Green's making 15.
So they could do Green and salary for Oladipo. Right.
Not even that much. It could be like, it's like Green and Tony Bradley. And then that should be able to get him there.
I'm sure the Rockets, and this may segue into the Knicks conversation, the Rockets would ask for Mr. Maxey. And I would guess that Philly would say no. I wonder if...
Well, here's the other thing to evaluate. If it's true that Morey and Fertitta didn't facilitate a trade because Fertitta didn't want to trade to Morey, then that makes it even more complicated, because then you think of like, all right, well, what teams is Victor Oladipo even going to be interested in? And there was that report not too long ago of Victor Oladipo saying to the Knicks, saying to the Heat, saying to, I think, the Raptors even, of like, hey, I want to play with you guys.
Yes. And can I just, right. But we should, it's important to also throw in there. And this stupid Oladipo thing is so complicated. After that story came out, his agent, Aaron Turner, came and publicly responded to that story with a quote. And again, I apologize. I forget who got the quote, but I know I read it, where he basically said, look at some of the teams who were mentioned in that story. Like, why would he want to go to them? That's obviously not true. And you, as you said, the three teams mentioned in the story were the Raptors, the Heat, and the Knicks. I think those are the only three. So pretty clearly he was basically saying, why the fuck would Victor Oladipo say that he or like want to go to the Knicks?
Right.
Which is an interesting layer. At the same time, this is the same guy who represents Kevin Knox and Jared Harper, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you never, I mean, God knows, trying to read agents' gamesmanship is probably a fraught exercise, but it's just, there's a lot of stuff floating around. I wanted to throw that out there.
Yeah. And so I think one of the big things with the article is it comes down to the money, as always. It often does. But it really depends on if the Knicks feel like Oladipo is the guy that they want to sign long-term, because this is a weak free agent class. There's no gun to their head that they have to sign a player like him. But if they wanted to, trading for him would make a ton of sense. First reason, the Knicks really don't have to send much money back because of the fact that they have $15 million in cap space still, or $17 million. And Victor Oladipo is earning 21. So what that means is they'd have to send back at minimum $4 million and boom, you get Victor Oladipo. We just talked about how cheap Fertitta is. I think the Rockets have about $131 million in payroll. Imagine shaving $14 million off of that when you really can't get many fans in the stands, and that hurts your bottom line. That's huge for them, especially because them being the Rockets, because the other teams that they'd have to trade with, they'd have to get matching salary, or they'd have to use a team like the Knicks, or to a much smaller extent, the Hornets, because they still have cap space, sort of salary.
The Hornets have like...
They have like $4 or $6 million. It's very small.
It's not a lot. Yeah, okay.
Right. So it's that idea. It's also, well, if the Heat traded for him, what assets do they really have? They can't trade any of their first round picks. No one's going to trade a first round pick for half a season or so of Oladipo anyway.
They've got some second round picks
that...
No, they can. The Heat can trade a first. It gets funky.
It's...
You get the protections.
Based on protections, it pushes things off. That's the
problem. But here's the, again, this is such a complicated discussion. There's a pick, I think, that they can adjust the protections. I'm going to look it up right now because I think the Rockets may be able to shift the protections on a pick like they own of Miami. I'm going to look it up right now.
So Miami, OKC, and Houston are all kind of tangled in this.
In all of the, yes. Right. Yeah.
So, but here's the thing. The Heat, no matter what, are giving up a first. The question is
whether the Rockets
are getting their pick, or if the Thunder are getting their pick because of how it. So they still don't have their pick this year, and they can't trade next year because of the Stepien.
Yes, but they can trade 2026 and 2027, assuming that a pick that they currently have out, we're going to talk about the Heat here, converts in the first year that is eligible to convert.
But they can't trade that yet based on the fact that they don't know if it will convert because they're...
Well, it's not guaranteed. 2023,
right, but that's the problem. The NBA has to assume that you can never at any point have two future picks that are out completely. So if in 2023, it's 1-14 protected, 15-30 go to OKC, and then it's like that for the next 4 years, which would be to 2026. Even if it winds up finishing in 2026, they can't trade 2027 because of the risk of it overlapping where it's 2 years in a row. So the Heat really don't have the assets at their disposal to easily trade. Now they could call up OKC and say like, hey, what if we just had it be like 2025 is the pick protection, and we'll throw you another second round pick as a thank you. They could do that, but there's a lot that goes into factoring it. And
The Rockets are going to want they're not getting Harrow. They're going to want Robinson at the very least. I don't think they're going to get Robinson. So then they're going to ask for Achiuwa. And I don't know. Is that enough for Victor Oladipo? And they would have to give up. Well, Olynyk and Achiuwa, I think salary wise would get it done.
I don't see them giving up anything of value to get Oladipo. Because they cleared the cap space.
But we should talk about why, and that's because the other rumor that's been out there, not so secretly, is that he's going to walk there in free agency this summer.
Right, which is certainly a possibility. But yeah, in the event that, you know, like if the Knicks wanted desperately to have him, trading for him also makes a lot more sense because of the fact that if they trade for him and then look to extend him, they can offer something that Miami can't.
A fifth year.
Yes, but more importantly, I guess in this case, because I don't think that with someone with that injury history, they'd offer him the fifth year. They can offer a raise of 8% per year, whereas the Heat would only be able to do a max of 5% because he wouldn't be traded there. But then the other counter is that there are no state taxes in Miami or in Florida. So as a result, you know, what offsets versus the other? And then you look at the teams, like, does he want to join the Heat if they keep playing like they've been playing? Does he want to join the Knicks if they show signs like today and start winning? You know, there are a whole plethora of factors. But you trade for Oladipo if you feel like you want him long term, not like this is our year to capitalize. And I could see the Heat trying to do that, trying to make some sort of panic move of let's get him here. Let's show him the Heat culture. We know we want him anyway. We're not going to use those second round picks. We found Duncan Robinson in a dumpster and turned him into an elite player, at least an elite shooter.
It's like, harsh. Dumpster. I mean, Could have been in like a field or something. Had to be a dumpster.
He's earned it, and he's going to earn every dollar that he gets this summer. But that sort of thing where it really depends on if you want him. And if you don't, that's totally fine too. Like, I'm okay with the idea of not having Victor Oladipo. It's just, who are you going to have outside of him?
I think, listen, he is easily the name, other than LaVine, who I think is depending on how the Bulls season progresses, depending on how the Knicks season progresses, I think there's probably going to need to, I would wager that there will be some LaVine rumors that will pop up. And that's not based on anything I've heard.
We've already seen them. We saw them last year.
Well, we saw them when Bagley reported that the Knicks were this regime, right? I think that rumor came out. Yeah. We're keeping an eye on LaVine. The teams that I just want to throw out there. So the two teams that have been linked to Oladipo, the heaviest are the Heat, obviously, which again, whether you think they'll give up Achiuwa and Olynyk for salary. And again, it's not a guaranteed future first, but like the possibility of a future first that could maybe convey, Dallas Mavericks. Well, that's where it gets really interesting because they don't have a first round pick that they could trade until at the earliest 2025. So even though Hardaway Jr. makes the money work, is there a young player worth getting excited? I mean, like,
let me put it this way.
What?
There is no way on God's green earth that the Houston Rockets will trade Victor Oladipo to the Dallas Mavericks.
You don't think so?
They're a division rival. The idea of seeing him in a normal season in their division, like, it's just, I don't see that happening, period. I know that we've seen the Celtics trade with the Sixers and the Celtics trade with the Nets. Like, I'm not saying it doesn't happen. I do not see a situation where that happens. But I did, in my draft, I did talk about the Dallas Mavericks because they are a very intriguing option. And this is the one year that they have to use cap space. And they can't just use it on a player who's towards the end of his career, right? Like, they can't go after Kyle Lowry, as great of a fit as he would be, because he's going to be 35 years old. And you need to take a multiple year salary because all that money is going to close up next year when Luka Doncic needs his extension. So it really depends on how you can facilitate this. And it's going to be tough for them, but I don't see Victor Oladipo going to Dallas based especially on their history in terms of luring free agents. Now, you could say they have Luka Doncic and Kristaps Porzingis, so anything's possible. But then it's the idea of, is that the wisest investment for Dallas? Because Oladipo, that they need is just significant defensive help. And Oladipo he helps offensively, but this is also the team that had the number one offense in the NBA last year. That's not their problem, per se.
We also don't know, does he want to go someplace where he is clearly not the guy. I feel like I don't know. I mean, just reading the tea leaves, that Indiana situation seemed fantastic. If you want to say, well, he didn't like the coach, well, they fired the coach a couple months ago and hired a new coach. So like, what else is there to point to for Oladipo? I mean, he's from Indiana. So like, what else could there be that he's not happy about? And I think it's the fact that now all of a sudden he's playing alongside Sabonis, who was an all-star last year. He's playing against Brogdon, who is more deserving of an all-star spot than him this year. So maybe that's what he doesn't like. So I think there is definitely something there. And then the only other, I guess it's, it's worth mentioning the Sixers. Like, if the Sixers put, we heard the Rockets wanted Thibault in any Harden trade. Sixers aren't going to offer Maxey. So does like Thibault and Danny Green and a future Sixers first get it done? Maybe, like, so I guess
I think it's even too much. Again, like, I don't think Oladipo is going to go for.
Yeah, but it's Daryl Morey. He wheels and deals, sure, as much as anyone.
Right. But then you also have to look at it as like, well, who's really bidding against him to the point where they're giving up Thibault and a first round pick?
Well, then that's a perfect way to close out our conversation. What are the Knicks offering? Because if you're telling me that the Knicks could send out, they're not sending out quickly.
But again, I don't see Oladipo costing. What do
you
think he's?
If you, they're not getting him for Frank Ntilikina.
I'm not saying that. No, but you're not giving up a young asset for Victor Oladipo because you, like, everyone knows what the risk is here. Everyone knows that he could very easily walk at the end of the season. Like, they're not going to give up this insane haul. So if I'm the Knicks, you know, I mean, what I say to Fertitta is we can save you a ton of money and we can give you some decent second round picks because I don't see what else any other team is going to offer that eclipses that. Because again, we've talked about how cheap he is. If you take on $17 million and all you're sending back is salary filler, right? And you're sending in a couple second round picks like the Hornets pick this year and the Timberwolves pick in 2026, which could be a decent enough asset. Like, that is something that's more interesting.
I don't think they're going to trade him for that. I think the absolute.
Who else is offering something that's that significant for a player with injury history?
I think the Sixers offer Thibault. I think the Sixers absolutely offer Thibault without a moment of second thought.
But again, if the Rockets have no interest in trading with the Sixers, then what does that do?
Okay. If I think there's a real, real, real chance that there could be subtraction here because I absolutely think the Knicks are looking at this situation as like, well, we got all this cap space in 6 months from now, 5 months from now, whatever the hell it is. What the hell else? We're not, you know, we're going to give an $80 million offer to Josh Richardson to try to take him away from the mat. It's like, there's nothing else, you know, there's nothing. And don't give me Kawhi. Kawhi's not happening.
And they went after Hayward this past offseason. It's like, yeah, we know that getting guys who have injury histories, who are still all star or at least playing at a good level, like they're going to look at those guys. And Hayward went to Charlotte.
He looks pretty good too.
He does, of course. But it's the idea of he could have stayed in Boston. He could have gone to New York. He could have gone back home to Indiana. He didn't want any of that. He went back to Charlotte, the place where he signed an offer sheet to start with in the first place, got matched by Utah. So, again, like, I'm at the point where, at least from a free agency standpoint, nothing surprises me anymore. Because clearly these guys are going to do what they feel is best for them, not necessarily to win. Because if he wanted to win, Hayward would have found a way to go to Indiana. He would have stayed in Boston, but he didn't. So maybe Oladipo doesn't want that. Maybe that's not a priority to him. Because, like, as you said, it seemed like Indiana was the perfect situation, and it just did not work out for him.
The last thing I'll say right here on this, because I do think it is relevant, is the Rockets. I want to just double check and make sure that I'm not speaking out of turn here. I do not believe the Rockets have any incentive to tank this year because their first round pick. Yeah. Right. It's only if it's in the top four are they guaranteed to be able to keep it? Correct.
Correct. Unless they decide to become the worst team, then they have like a 52% chance of keeping their pick.
Yeah. So tanking is not really on the table for them. Let's put it this way. Like, I don't think they will be motivated by that in terms of trading away Victor Oladipo or not trading him away. At the same time, I also don't think they're going to be motivated by trying to win because I think it's going to become pretty clear pretty soon that this is not a playoff team. Although, who knows, maybe Fertitta wants that sweet, sweet play-in game money. If he could get if you're the eighth seed, you get potentially two home games. Listen, you never know with the guy. But then again, if that was motivating to him, saving a lot of money would be even more motivated to him, right? Okay, if they say it's Kevin Knox and the 2023 Dallas pick, I don't even think they need to throw any salary filler in because Kevin Knox is making over $4 million. Are you doing that trade?
No, I don't think I am. I'd say for the Dallas pick, just alone, and some other salary filler, sure. But again, it's like this idea of I don't see them trading Kentucky players. I don't see them trading one of Aaron Turner's clients for another. I think that they're going to try to consolidate.
I didn't even think of that. That's yeah.
It's again. I don't see Oladipo being worth a whole lot to the point. But it really depends, right? It depends on if the Rockets do want to kind of stay afloat and get some sort of player who is like fake good enough to keep them up. Cause that's not what the Knicks can necessarily offer.
I don't think they care about that one right. bit.
And if it's purely financial, then again, saving $17 million and the idea of having a couple second round picks for Victor Oladipo that you can say are part of the asset.
But again, all right, what are we betting? There's a very good chance that this bet that we're about to make does not convey because Victor Oladipo does not get traded. I am saying if they trade him, that trade will include a first round pick. God willing, it will not be one of the Knicks' own first round picks, and it will be hopefully the 2023 Dallas pick and not this year's Dallas pick. But I will bet you that trade contains maybe it's Frank Ntilikina. And the 2023 Dallas pick, but it will be one of a first round pick. And you're going to bet me that it's seconds and like filler.
If it's with the Knicks, if it's another team, I think it's anything goes. If it's with, yes, I would say that.
All right. So what do, I don't know, a six pack of the, sure. of the winner's choosing.
That's fine.
Okay. There we go.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I'm trying to decide now if they do get Oladipo for Ntilikina and the 23 Dallas pick, would you really be disappointed?
It would hinge on re-signing Oladipo for sure. Because if you're not re-signing Oladipo and you're trading away Frank Ntilikina and a first round pick for like 45 games of Oladipo, then that's a pretty shitty return on investment, wouldn't you say?
Oh my God. It would almost be like trading away the best young player that your team has had since Patrick Ewing for two possibly decent first round picks and sack of magic beans.
It's not that
served
not
as a victory
like
cigar tonight in
not,
Boston.
But that's not what it's like at all. It's different because it's the idea of clearing space. Look, it'd be one thing if the Knicks traded for, you know, like one of those two players that they then tried to sign. The reason they're trading isn't to get rid of to clear it. It's to get rid of to then re-sign that player. But there's the risk. And I acknowledge that here, and I'll acknowledge it in the article as well. There is a full risk, and I can totally get why people would be turned off to the idea of trading anything for Oladipo. I get that.
I just want to say for the record, if they got Oladipo for the 23 Dallas pick, unlike Frank or Dennis Smith Jr. or Nerlens Noel, like what one of these less, not Kevin Knox.
Right.
That would be a home run regardless of what happened this summer, because that is a risk you take in the NBA, in my estimation.
I can't agree with that. Because what does that really get you? If he walks to Miami, then you just traded assets and like, well, we tried.
It's a top 10 protected pick in 2023.
But it's look, I'm not saying like, oh my God, these are incredible assets. Then you can't part with those for this risk. It's the idea of, again, like, you want to have some sort of safety net here. It's the idea of if you can get something with that asset that like, let's not even talk about the filler, right? Just that first round pick, the Dallas pick, even if it's like 25, 28, whatever it is, you still want to turn that into something that can be used in the future. Even if it's that pick
itself. It's opportunity cost.
Right. Exactly. And I don't think the opportunity of doing business for Victor Oladipo to play 45 games with my team before he walks over to Pat Riley and the Heat is a home run.
I'm not saying it's a home run. I'm saying I would deem it an acceptable risk. Obviously, if he walks, then that is a 100% a black mark on Leon Rose and his regime
right.
for A, not reading the room right, and B, not being able to convince a guy that you had in your building to stay in your building after the whole World Wide West of it all, right?
I agree.
Who's the whisperer, right? Okay, so we're in agreement on that. Okay. All right, let's see what happens. Nothing would shock me, I'll say that. But Yeah, we'll see what happens. All right. You've talked about this article. When is it coming out? Because I can't wait to read this thing.
I think this week or next week. I've got another one that has to do sort of with Mitch and Frank and Desmond Jr. as well, actually. So that'll be out, I think, first, and then the other one will be out not too long after. But again, Oladipo can be traded at any point. He just can't be aggregated with another salary for a while. So basically, like, but I don't see the market heating up for him for a bit anyway. But, you know, you never know.
I don't think he's going to get dealt until probably close to the trade deadline.
I agree. Yeah. But there's still the opportunity where if a team like, again, the Knicks sit at 6-8, right? They're going to go out west. There's a very good chance that they go 1-3 in those games, possibly 0-4. I think the one win could be against the Kings. That sort of thinking where at what point do you kind of say, like, we're in it, but we're not, you know, like, and again, the wait till game 25, as we've been saying, but still it's that idea of, okay, well, you know, at what point do we say the season's lost, or at what point do we say we're all in on trying to get that play-in game without mortgaging much of the future? And we see Oladipo as getting him in the building and then trying to win from there. That's the question. So, you know, that's why I think they'll wait a little bit.
It's fascinating because you could make arguments for waiting to get him so you don't win too many more games, right?
Yep.
But, you know, if they fuck around and go 2-2 or 3-1 on this West Coast swing, right?
Yep.
Which, look, we you would say is lunacy, but this is the same team that won, you know, 5 out of 6 games against really good competition. So who the hell knows? And obviously just blew out Boston. All right. This was a lot of fun. I had a blast. Everybody out there, thank you for thank you, Jeremy. Your spirit and energy that you bring to this and to deal with my nonsense every week is just.
Of course. I got one more thing, actually. One more thing.
Yes, please.
So I'm sure a lot of fans saw that Yusuf Nurkic went down with a fractured right wrist.
He did.
And the Blazers are pretty thin at center. So I know that.
I don't know if I describe Ian as canter as thin. That's a lot of things. Thin is not one of them. He's a hulky man.
He is. He's a husky boy. but I would say that I'm sure the idea has come about to help Portland see if a deal can be made. First things first, if a player like Nerlens Noel were able to be traded, it's not going to be until at least another few weeks from now. Not sure if Portland's even interested. Portland's pick situation is also pretty abysmal. They don't have too many assets at their disposal.
Because of the Covington trade, yeah.
Right. The Covington trade makes it that they can't – the first is protected every single year that it's available. So just a thought here, but if the Knicks absolutely wanted to make a deal, Zach Collins is the type of player that you could very easily get – not even on a buy low, but just like Zach Collins and a second round pick for someone like Nerlens Noel in a few weeks. That'd be kind of fun to see. That'd be interesting. Then you can, you know, you still have Taj Gibson. You don't need to rely on Zach Collins. You can sign Zach Collins for super cheap if you even want him. You don't have to keep him because he hasn't shown a whole lot.
I kind of rather have Anthony Simons, I think. I don't know.
Sure, but it was more interesting.
Doesn't make enough money.
Right, yeah. Okay. I'd have to take a look at it again, but I think it's a little off. But okay. Regardless, I mean, there's enough tinkering where I'd love to see something. I just, we're A, not going to see anything for at least a couple weeks.
Yeah.
And B, you know, I mean, there's a deal out there that can be made that's on the smaller end. We'll see if the Knicks actually decide to do it. So that's all.
We shall. Master of the cap. I love it. Jeremy Cohen, thank you. Everybody out there, I'm sorry if we droned on for a while, but what can I say? This is a lot to talk about with this team.
It was a great win.
Great win. Fantastic stuff. We will be back with you. I will be back with you with another episode in a couple of days. And then, of course, Jeremy will be back next week for wait a minute. Maybe we should talk about this off air. I think next week's game is, what time is that start time? That is a 9 p.m. start time. Oh, boy.
Yeah. We'll figure
that
out.
We're going to have to figure out some shit for that because
we got to predict our four, though. That's the one thing we didn't do.
Oh, we didn't predict our four. Okay.
Well, I'll go because I was victorious again this week.
To hell with you. Yeah. All right. Go.
I'm going to say
Orlando tomorrow, or when you're listening to this, Orlando today, Golden State Thursday, Friday. So it's back to back in Sacramento, and then Sunday. Should we predict the Portland game just in case we record before? Yeah, throw the Portland game.
So I'm feeling good. I think I'm actually going to go 2-2 this time. The reason that is, I think the Magic are really sputtering without Markel Fultz, who went down with an ACL tear. It's unfortunate because they seem to be playing very well. So him being down certainly has hurt them. It is a 12 o'clock game, quick turnaround. So I could see them maybe not doing the best that they can potentially. And then I think the other game they win is against the Kings. The Kings are abysmal defensively. Oh my God. I think they've let up 118 points a game.
Well, they have
something absurd like that.
I know they have the second worst net rating in the league. Which is funny because they've had some nice wins, but they've been close wins, and then they've gotten their doors blown off.
Right. So I'm going to go 2-2 with those two wins.
So you just fucked me because fuck. I can't predict 3-1.
We can do the same thing, John.
No, that's no fun. I got to go 1-3. All right. I don't like you.
Wow, John hates the Knicks. Jeez, guys.
Why do I invite you on this show? All right. Thank you, Jeremy Cohen, despite my distaste. Again, thank you, everybody out there, for listening to another episode of the show. And don't forget to check all of our shows out on the YouTube channel, Knicks Film School YouTube channel. Chris Persiain and I also did a breakdown of Mitchell Robinson's defense, which was fun. And Andrew Claudio, shout out to him for producing this show, as well as all of our YouTube content. He's doing just absolute yeoman's work to bring this operation up another level. So thank you, Andrew. And yeah, man, 6-8. Giddy up. Onwards and upwards. Here we go. Never going to lose again. This is it. Undefeated the rest of the year. We'll see you later.